Please join me to welcome Dr. Shanti Robinson to East West.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you. Okay. Can everybody hear me? We finally have a cordless mic here. I'm very happy about this. Okay. That's nice to be back here. I was actually scheduled to give this talk on May 11th, and late April I found out I needed to have some major shoulder, actually a reconstruction of my shoulder. And so I asked Asha Praver to come and give the talk. So maybe some of you came when Asha spoke. But then for this time, I said, let me actually give this talk that I wanted to give. Let me say to all of you, just to begin with, that the chakras are a very interesting and subtle topic. And I'm sure some of you know it. For some reason, you were all drawn here tonight. Now, it never surprises me. I can tell you I speak very often here. I speak at the Ananda Temple Center, where I'm one of the ministers. But I speak publicly, really around the country. And if I talk about the chakras, wellness, or death and dying, the most popular topics that we speak about. But it doesn't surprise me in a way, because the chakras are part of what I would call an eternal truth. They are not part of any religion. They don't belong to any one sect. And whether people know this or not, whether no matter what your understanding, big or small, of the chakras is, somehow we're drawn to it because we know that we will find a certain truth there. It's an interesting thing, and I've watched it for decades, actually, now, as I've spoken. But the other thing I want to say is this. Some of you I know, there are some of you in here who have been to many of my talks before, so nothing I say tonight will surprise you. But some of you are brand new, and it is virtually impossible to talk about the chakras without getting to the subject of karma and reincarnation. It's impossible because the chakras are really a spiritual blueprint for all of us. Now, why am I saying that right now? I'm going to come back to it. But I'm saying it because I understand it's not always what people expect. And unlike many of the topics I talk about, karma and reincarnation can be very polarizing. And I know that. So I'm going to say to you what a professor said to me when I was in my 20s and going through my first round of education. If you need to get up and go, please get up and go. It's perfectly okay. And I really mean that, because nobody knows what they're walking into when they came to this talk. So feel just easy about getting up if it doesn't resonate. And even if you're sitting in the front row, feel free to get up and leave if it doesn't resonate. There's nothing worse than being stuck in a talk that it's not sitting well in your chakras, if you will. So let me just take a moment and introduce myself so you can all just be a little clear about where I'm teaching from. My entire life has been ministerial in some very deep and real ways, but it manifested through the whole first part of my life and even now in the field of medicine. So I am a physician. I'm a practicing physician for many, many, many years in internal medicine and in the field of chemical dependency, which I learned to love. And now I have a practice very appropriate to tonight, called transformational medicine. So we all know that transformation means change. So really, I do mostly a coaching practice at this point. People who come to see me come, I would think, if they hear that word, because they're thinking they want to change, be different, do something differently, find different ways to heal something. Sometimes that's true, sometimes it's not true. But that's what I do these days. So I love medicine. I've had many, many years in it. I'm sure stories will come up tonight. So I'll just tell you that I for many years had the third largest practice in the United States of internal medicine. So I've practiced a lot of medicine, and I've taught at Stanford for many years. I tried moving to the East Coast once, but it didn't work for me. I kept telling my partner, if I stay here, I'm going to definitely get sick and die. I need to go back to California, which I did. But while I was there, I had a very large practice, taught a little bit through Hopkins and other places. So really, in some ways, I had a very, I plugged into a very traditional part of medicine, though I did it in a rather untraditional way. And like many of you, I would imagine, because you're here, you're at East West, I'm not meeting you in a Stanford classroom, which would be different. You are on some type of a quest, whatever that is. Probably most of you would describe it as a spiritual quest. Again, you're looking for something unusual. Otherwise, we just don't wind up here. So that's good. That hopefully puts us at least in the same ballpark here. As I mentioned to you, my spiritual path happens to be Ananda, which is just right up the road. And I say that to you only because it's irrelevant for tonight in some ways. But Ananda is based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. And he brought to the West something that he ultimately called self-realization. So I'm telling you that because it is not a religion. It is a path that says we are all a manifestation of divine energy. And that what life is about, whether anybody would use these words or not use these words, and I'm hoping by saying all of this out loud, that if these are not the words that you would use, that you could find some way to make it make sense to you. Find your own language. I teach a lot of meditation. I teach a lot of everything on the spiritual path, and for many, many years, I used to try and not use the word God. And that was a challenge for me. And then finally, about 10 years ago, I said to everybody, I'm going to use the word God. But if you Google that word, you will find millions of responses to it. It means something different to everyone. So let it mean to you what it means to you. Which is challenging for all of us because we all grew up so differently. I myself grew up, I was trying to be an Orthodox Jew for a big part of my life. Many people, I mean, whatever sect of Christianity you grew up in, some of us are not as enamored with the word God. But just take it to mean your own higher self, okay? And I'm saying this to you so that I don't have to be careful about language. And hopefully, everybody could take something away from here that's deeply meaningful and not be put off by any particular language that I use. You know, I teach these subtle, esoteric things all the time, but I, like everyone else, have learned to go to the internet and just sort of dig around a lot with what other people, you know, what do they have to say about this verse in the Bible or this thing from the Bhagavad Gita or whatever I'm going to be giving a talk or a sermon on. It's fascinating. So I know that if we Google many of these things, you get these now millions of responses. Just go home and look up. Just put in spirituality. It means something different to each of us, as it should. And it should because, as I said before, we are all, each of us, whether we think this way, whether we've thought this way before, we are a spark of the divine. But every single one of us is an individual and unique spark of the divine. And that matters a great deal because our experience in life will not be and cannot be ever the same as anybody else. It's virtually impossible. Now, there's a lot of Sanskrit teachings about that because these teachings are thousands of years old. And not just because of the Hindu religion. I mean, it really, Jesus was here 2017 years ago, and we find out that he said pretty much all the same things that Krishna said who was here before him. And then Jesus was saying a lot of the same things that Moses said. So when we talk about each of us being a spark of the divine with our own individual path to follow, it's so essential to what we're talking about tonight. And quite frankly, you know, this talk was titled The Chakras in Illness and in Health, or something like that. I don't remember what the title of
Blueprint.
In the write-up, I'm sure it said something about a blueprint. But the understanding that I want to convey is that knowing that we are different from every other human being, that we literally came in this time with a spiritual blueprint, and it's a perfect word for it, a kind of roadmap for how our life was going to be. Not that we're stuck with that, not that we have to stay exactly as we thought at the very beginning. But if we know that, then we're not trying to live our lives in terms of anybody else's notion of how things should be. Are there some spiritual principles that we might live by? Of course. Are there 10 commandments? Of course. Does that mean because we come in individual from everybody else that a commandment, thou shalt not kill, doesn't apply to us? Of course not. Under most circumstances, most of us should not kill. So there are certain realities that we have to live by. How we get through this life, how we move towards being the best we can be, the most uplifted, the most expansive, is not necessarily what it's going to look like for anybody else. And when you listen to the true masters of all religions, all of the great spiritual teachers, nobody would argue with that. Nobody. That every one of them, and I'm not going to do a lot of this tonight because it's not what the talk about is about, but I could quote things to you from all of those avatars that I just talked about, Jesus, Krishna, Buddha, Moses, many of them a lot less well known. They're all telling us the same thing. They're all saying to us, like Jesus said, everything I am, you are too, and more. Saying you have no idea what your potential is, but I'm here to tell you that whatever you see me doing, whatever you feel when you're near me, not me now, I'm talking about Jesus, not me, what he was saying, whatever you see in me, whatever you love in me, whatever way you feel uplifted, whatever miracles happen, anything and everything, you all have that exact potential. So, the chakras turn out to be very subtle, energetic realities for all of us. And what they are, chakra actually means wheel, and it's spoken of that way because it's energy moving in circular directions. And these chakras actually exist within us in the very core of our being, in what is called the astral spine. So not spine like we think of it. I couldn't go in there and do a spinal tap on it like I could on all of you in other ways. I can't get an MRI of it. I can't x-ray it the way we're used to doing. But just because we don't see it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So they are, and I'm going to talk around this but come back to this, as real within each of us as anything, in fact, more real, if you will. And again, I hope within 10 minutes that this will all make sense and not just be words, than most of what we see, most of what we consider what is the truth. Most of us actually think, and we're conditioned this way, we're meant to be this way, our ego tells us this is the way it is, that what we see is what's real, and what we see is what we get. So we define life, every one of us, by the body that we have, And we all stand in front of many mirrors in our life, and we decide that we like this about ourselves and not that. And we'd feel a little better if, I mean, I can tell you my whole life I've been chasing 5 pounds. I've been chasing it since I was a teenager. It was always going to be better if I could be 5 pounds thinner. It's ridiculous, you know? Or by the job that we have, or how well our children are doing, or how well we did, how many degrees we have. We often define how we feel, who we are, how successful we are in terms of a material reality. And in terms of our senses, we have a very sense-oriented relationship to the world. And I'm talking about these things. I know these things to not be true. But of course, I live in terms of them too. Because it's how we're conditioned. It's the very nature of the human condition to be in this physical world and living in terms of it. So it's not like that's a horrible thing that we do. It's just that until we begin to get and to live in terms of some other reality that isn't so material, is really the word. Not so like, I can come over here and touch this table. I can look and see what color shirt you're wearing. All the things that guide us. Until we begin to have an experience of a different reality, we cannot actually succeed in bringing into our lives all of those things that we think we want. Because for most of us, our lives are dictated by two principles. Most of us, we want to avoid pain. We don't know any human being that doesn't want to avoid pain. And we want to be happy. That's what we all want in life. I mean, I could say we want to be loved, because that's true too. But that's sort of all on the way to being happy. We could say we want to be healthy, but everything fits into avoiding pain and finding happiness. And what we do, and again, I'm saying we, and I mean we, is that we continue to pursue that throughout this life. And as I said to you, we can't talk about the chakras without talking about karma and reincarnation, but throughout many lives, by trying constantly to bring more into our lives. If we're not happy yet, if we get just a little more of what we already have, then we'll be happy. You know, there were studies done, these were done decades ago, but legitimate, statistically significant studies that showed that if you interviewed or passed out questionnaires to thousands of people, the vast majority of people felt if they could have 5% more money, they'd be happy. 5% was the number everybody felt. And we live that way. Sometimes it's not as gross. If I said to you that there are people who just live to get the nicer car, the nicer house, more clothes, probably many of you would say that's not you. Again, this is a self-selected group. Every one of you walked into East West. But for the vast majority of people in the world, that's true. And for us, it's true on a little more subtle level. We're not as aware of it, but we're always looking to solve our problems in that way. If somebody would just be a little nicer, if our children could just feel a little better about us, treat us a little better, if our child or husband didn't have a particular illness, whatever it is, it gets more and more refined and more what we would call justifiable. But we live in terms of feeling that our happiness lies outside of ourselves. And the other thing about that is that we often feel victimized. We often walk around the world saying, why is this happening to me? Whatever the this is, we ask as if we're being punished, or we're being the victim, or we're, you know, this isn't fair, is what a lot of people say. As if that is the reality. We rarely say, rarely, most of us, why is this happening right now? With a real questioning desire to know, what can I learn from this? What is trying to happen in my life? Now, we might do that, and again, I'm saying this is part of the human condition. We might do that at certain moments, but we rarely do it when the hard stuff comes. Rarely. It's rare to be able to stay calm, stay open, to say, everything that comes to me belongs in my life and is here for a reason, to show me, to teach me, to let me expand, to let me grow in ways that I could not possibly otherwise grow. How many of us know that? And even if we think we know it, how many of us can choose to live in terms of that when the hard stuff happens? When suddenly somebody we love gets a bad disease, or the house burns down, or the tsunami comes, or whatever it is, to really be able to live with that open questioning, even greeting. This is where the chakras come in. And these are hard lessons to learn in a way, the whole of it. But I'm going to talk to you about it a little bit now. And hopefully, if we can get it, we can leave here, and again, maybe some of you already know all this, but we can leave here knowing without a doubt that our lives are exactly perfect for us as they are. That there could never possibly be a mistake, that nobody is doing anything to us, that we are bodies of energy moving through the world as an individual piece of this whole big one soul, if you will, superconscious being, whatever you want to call it, that we've been made manifest from that energetic body. We are nothing but pure energy. Now, there are some of you sitting here, and I know you've heard this over and over. You have to hear it again. You cannot talk about any of these spiritual realities, eternal truths. You can believe it or not believe it. You can understand it or not understand it. You can be in Half Moon Bay and live there through months and months of pure fog. You never see the sun. If somebody was born and raised there and they had never seen the sun, do you think you could tell them, oh, listen, there's this thing that gets up in the sky and it's really hot and it's out all the time in certain places? They would have no idea what you're talking about. But it doesn't mean that there's not a sun. Do you know what I mean? I was thinking about what came to my mind today. I watched a documentary once, maybe some of you have seen it, about a group of people who went and took young African boys from these huge colonies that had been developed after so many wars and everything in Africa, so many children were left homeless. And there's a name for all this, which I can't remember, but I'll bet some of you know. It doesn't actually matter. But they wound up developing communities of tens of thousands of young boys. And some of the older boys sort of adopted the younger boys as younger brothers, and they were taking care of them. And a group of people from the West, not all United States, but from the West, went and got a group of these people and brought them to the United States and filmed them from the time they left Africa until they came here. And they set them up in these lovely apartments, and they took them out shopping, and they took them around to have all of these experiences. Now, these were people who had never lived outside of a field in their lives. They never had running water. They had known nothing about electricity. They had never seen light. They ate what they could pick up out of the ground. And they were filming them as they were having these experiences. It was an extraordinary documentary. But I was thinking about it today because we live, I mean, can you have to begin to be able to imagine what that looks like. to walk into Walmart or a Safeway when they were like standing there for a half hour opening and closing a closet. They couldn't imagine that there was such a thing as a closet door. How could they imagine? But it didn't make any of it any less real. It is our reality because we live with it, because we know it. But to somebody who's never seen these things, they don't exist. So I'm telling you that to say to you, when you start talking about energetic realities that have everything to do with every second of your life, please don't decide that it's bogus because you've never either heard of it or had an experience of it, or you haven't yet learned enough in life to make it real for you. I remember when it came to me. I remember when I started getting, my God, there is something going on in this world that I know nothing about. And again, some of you have heard this. I could tell you dozens of stories now. Because you see, when we see things that we don't understand, we often call them miracles. And we just say, oh, that's a miracle. Like it's inexplicable. So the first thing that ever happened to me, I share this with you so that you can relate to it in your own life. I was a nurse for many years before I went back to medical school. And I was an intensive care unit nurse. And you have to understand, this was in the 60s. And medicine was not as advanced as it is right now. And I mean, we just didn't know so much of what we know. But I was an ICU nurse, and I was working nights. And one night, a man who I had been taking care of for a couple of weeks now in the intensive care unit had a cardiac arrest. And we started resuscitating him. I called this whole team. You know, you've all seen it, at least in the movies or TV, if you're not in medicine yourself. And this team came, and I kept having this feeling that we should not stop this resuscitation. I was probably 21 years old, maybe 22. I didn't know one thing about what I'm talking to you about tonight, not one thing. The doctors kept saying we should stop the resuscitation. But I'll tell you, ICU nurses are we know a lot. We often know more than most of the doctors who are coming because we're in ICU all the time. We're in intensive care units. They're not. So we just learn a lot. And the truth is, when they have to come there for an emergency, they depend on us. And I kept saying to these doctors, you cannot stop. And at one minute, my attention was drawn up into the corner of the room. This is an absolutely true story. And I see this man up in the corner of the room. He's up there. And I'm looking at him, but we're working on this body. Remember, I'm 21. I mean, I'm 69 now. A lot's happened. But I was 21. And all of a sudden, he's smiling. He's happy as can be. And he winks at me with his right eye. And I turn around and I say to the doctors, we are not stopping this resuscitation. So we continue and we bring him back. The doctors were saying to me, his pupils are fixed and dilated. That means brain dead. I said, I don't care. Do not. I said it with great force. So we wind up, the guy's heart restarts, and all goes well. The next day I walk into work, and I go over to him. John, how are you? He looks at me. He's intubated. He's on a respirator. That same beatific smile that I had seen up in the corner, and he winks at me with his right eye, and he squeezes my hand. And I remember I got on the phone and I called my mother. I was living in Washington, D.C. She was in Pittsburgh. And I was basically a kid, though. You know, you don't feel like a kid at 21. And I said to her, Mom, there is so much more going on than we know anything about here. Believe me. Now, remember, now we talk about what we call near-death experiences. They're not really near-death experiences. Those people die, like he died. Heart stopped, pupils fixed and dilated. But now many of these people have come back, and there's a lot of books. You could go out there, you could probably find 15 books written by them. It was not the case then. It changed my whole life, that experience. Here's the interesting thing. Once we open to knowing about other realities, once we're willing to allow ourselves to be moved by certain energies, whatever they are, many different ways I could speak to you about it, we start seeing those things more and more. They actually start manifesting in front of us. And we see these things, and we say to ourselves, look, I'm a sane human being. I'm not psychotic. I'm smart. I was able to make it through medical school and have this very successful practice. I'm calm. I'm reasonable. These things are actually happening. And you see enough of them, and you begin to realize what we call miracles are natural. That when something is not a miracle, it's because we're in the way of it. But we don't know that. We think we are fixed bodies, fixed material objects. Now, and this is all about the chakras. Now for decades already, this used to be unique when I talked about what the quantum physicists were saying. And I mean, I started back where particles that we were talking about now look like huge. They probably look like the size of a basketball compared to how small these particles have gotten, with everybody saying everything is energy, everything vibrating at different frequencies. This is a physical law of the universe now. This isn't some minister coming in who's, you know, having some ridiculous ideas. We know this, that everything's made up of exactly the same substrate of energies. And what makes it look different is that it's vibrating at different frequencies. So, given that, that's now the truth. I don't have to try and convince anybody of it anymore. I can't talk too much physics, so I couldn't, but the physicists know it to be true. So, what are these chakras? We are energetic beings. We are part of a sequence of events that's been put into motion from that energetic perspective and reality. It starts in what we call a causal world. Energy is. You can call that what you want. I call it superconsciousness. You can call it God. You can call it a part of everything that is. You can call it whatever you want to call it. Then, like everything in our life, there's a thought that comes, an idea. And what happens after we have an idea of anything? We say, I'm going to go to medical school. The next thing that's a thought. How do I put that into motion? I put some energy behind it. I start filling out applications. I start going on interviews to make it a reality. And then one day, I'm in Stanford Medical School. It's real. I go to classes there. I go into classrooms. I touch people. I examine them. Started as a thought. I put energy in. It became real. That's what's happened. That's how we come into existence, basically. Super consciousness, a thought, a vibration in the universe, in the entire universe, that becomes energy, and we call that the astral world, the vibration in the energy, so from causal to astral to the material world. It's a thought, it's energy, it's real. That's who we are. That doesn't mean we're not still that same energy. There was just a vibration put in to make us manifest. Everybody with me so far? Okay, raise your hand if I'm losing you, because this is important, okay? So, but what does that all look like, really? How does that actually happen? I don't know how it happened at the beginning. I don't know why God, if you will, decided to make that happen. You know, there are many people in this world who are suffering. Some of my very best friends who say to me, why in the world would God ever do that if he knew we were going to suffer? That's a question I can't answer. I don't think that question is answerable with the human mind. I don't think we can logically understand it. I also think, personally, it's a waste of energy. We're here. What are we going to do about it? Here we are in these bodies, stuck in these little bodies, but we're big souls. Nothing changed except that huge amount of cosmic, causal, astral energy that we are is now confined by this body. This body that's the size, whatever it is, that came in this time as a Westerner, that it came in as a woman, all these things that one of my teachers, Swami Kriyananda, used to call a big bundle of self-definitions. That's what he used to say. We're all a big bundle of self-definitions. But it's not what we really are. It's just where we let our mind come into play and tell us, oh, this is what you are. And you have all of these likes and dislikes, and you have all these inclinations and disinclinations. And we, in the Western world particularly, now unfortunately this is becoming much more global, but we feel the mind is such a great instrument. We bow to it all the time. We think it's the best thing that we have. So if we can get it with our minds, it's true. If it's beyond mind for most of us, it's not true. But that's not really the truth. It's not what it is. The mind, which comes into play when this spark of spirit decides, if you will, is drawn to magnetically that sperm and ovum that have united with an energetic flash, that soul decides for any number of reasons, not only do I want to be born, that's the family I'm going to come into. Why? Because it's a magnetic reality. Because we are drawn to certain families, parents, situations, places by this energy that we are to be able to, and this is where I'm going to talk to you about the chakras, continue the journey that the soul is really on, which is finding its way back to, not this little piece of this big spirit that we are, but finding its way back to that place of centeredness, of pure peace, of pure calmness, of pure love, of bliss, of joy, of vibrating only to the sound of Om, which is that one sound of creation. All of those super conscious creative forces that we once were, but we've left our home in all of that, and this soul is determined to find its way back. So what it does is it finds body, I'm going to come to you in 1 second, after body, lifetime after lifetime, experiences after experiences, unique to it, absolutely unique to it, that will help it find its way back to wholeness, to oneness, to avoid suffering, to find happiness. We could put a lot of words on it. There are many words, but they all mean the same thing, that we are hungry. We are all looking for something. We wouldn't be here tonight if we weren't. And we call it different things. We get confused. As I said, for a while, we think it's a bigger house, or we think it's the next pair of shoes, or we think it's that our kids have to get into Stanford. We get very confused about it. But the soul knows what it wants. And the soul that is now manifested in this astral spine. And as soon as I answer this man's question, I'm going to come back and tell you how that happens and exactly how it's working to draw us into the perfect life experiences for us. Some of them are beautiful. Some of them are horrible. Some of them are in beautiful bodies. Some of them are in not so beautiful bodies. It doesn't matter. As soon as you get the truth and you quit thinking that anything should be other than exactly as it is, you just fall into a place of peace and harmony. And believe it or not, you can maintain that even in the face of enormous stress. And many of the illnesses that we have only to do with this. And I'm going to tell you another story in a minute.
So I can wait till the end, but I did have a question.
Sure.
So you talked a lot about just because you can't see something doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And I don't dispute that. But my question would be, and this is not to say anything you say is true or untrue at all.
Yeah.
But my question is, there are a lot of interpretations of reality out there. And how do you discern which one is correct if you don't have evidence?
Well, you know, this is the huge question. This is the question that everybody who is at a at a certain stage of searching, and who knows they're searching, you know, who's really on a quest. I mean, it's what it is. But everybody asks, how will I know? How will I know? I have a whole practice of medicine that's made up, because I don't think you were here yet when I talked about, I do basically psycho-spiritual coaching in this practice called transformational medicine. I hear it constantly, but how am I going to know, Shanti? What are you going to give me exactly to make me feel that? I will tell you, this is the hardest thing in life, is how do we open to, the word for it is intuition, inspiration, and know when that's true. Because there are many different paths that would lead us to this truth. And there are many paths that will lead us astray. You know, there are many people out there who are aggrandizing their own needs. We know that. People calling themselves spiritual teachers, people calling themselves doctors who don't know really what they're talking about, people calling themselves ministers. We could go on. It's in every profession. How do we know when the path is true? And, you know, I'm going to say to you, which will, I'm sure, frustrate you, but I'm not trying to, is that once we have been able to move and to begin to move energy through our fourth chakra, which is the heart chakra, we begin to know more. I know this is true. And I will tell you, people ask me often, how do I know if it's the truth? How do I know if God's really talking to me? Again, if you don't call it God, whatever you want to call it. And I say to people, and I would bet many of you in this room have had this experience, when you have a flash of knowing something, and you know it absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt. Now, trust me, just think about it for a minute. You have not known many things beyond doubt. It's not how the human mind works. The human mind says, absolutely, I'm thrilled about going to Stanford Medical School. I was accepted here. I want to go to Stanford. And then the mind comes in and says, are you sure you want to be at Stanford? You know, they're pretty scientific. You're a pretty bhakti heart lady. Oh, absolutely. Look, and I just met this person, and I love them. But what about Palo Alto? Do you really want to? And it goes on and on and on. The mind doesn't stop. It has so many issues. But when something comes to you, the day that my first spiritual teacher said to me, when I was thinking that I had to have my first child, I went back to medical school when I was 32, so I was now 40. I was done with all of my schooling, training, and I was certain now's the time, now I'm going to have a baby. It was a big deal then. Being 40 these days and having a baby isn't as big a deal, but I mean this. And this man's name, he was an Indian man. His name was Sant Keshava Das. I followed him here and around India and around the world for many, many, many years. He left his body a long time ago. But anyway, and one day he said to me, Shanti Ma, I want to speak with you. He said to me, I understand you're going up to meet your godchild. I had flown from California to Florida to greet him when he came in from India. And from there, I was going up to Boston to meet my godchild, who was 4 weeks old. And I kept saying to my husband, I'm so worried about this. I feel like I'm going to be jealous. I'm not going to be able to feel the joy I should feel for them. This is going to be terrible. What are you going to do? Or don't you feel like I do, that we have to have a baby? This went on every day of my life for a year. Are we going to have a baby or are we not going to have a baby? Are we going to have a baby or are we not? I was older. I was finishing training. Now my best friend has this baby. She, of course, was 10 years younger than me. The night before I'm leaving Florida, I had never mentioned this to this man, my dilemma, my question, calls me up to the room where he's staying. Shanti Ma, he says, he takes my face in his hands. He says to me, you're going to see this child of God, aren't you? Not godchild. I said, yes, Guruji, I am. He didn't know I was going to Boston. I never told him. He knew none of this. He gets me right in his face, and he says to me, when they ask you, Shanti, you tell them, I am your child. Just like that. This jolt of energy, I swear to you. Now, this is 29 years ago already. I didn't know what this meant. You have to understand, I wasn't waiting for this. this jolt of energy. I walked out of there, and I said to my husband, I feel totally fine about going to see Meet Daniel. From that moment on, from that moment, I never wanted a child again. The whole idea of it just left me. Gone. That's inspiration. I had nothing to do with that. That's what happens when you are dealing with the truth. Now, to know that, and you have to have begun to open. You have to. So let me tell you what happens. These chakras are whirlpools of energy. They're as real as anything, but you don't see them. They're resting in the very core of our being. In fact, that bit of spirit that becomes us, that Yogananda says, the ego is a soul identified with the body. That's how he defines it. So that soul jumps into that, unites with that sperm and ovum, and the very first thing that's created is the medulla. Now, this is true, I mean, anatomically and with an embryo. And from there, our spine and our whole nervous system. Those are the first things that grow in an embryo. I mean, as it goes down, vital organs come off of it. But what is really happening energetically is that we are first that energy that is the soul. You see, we think we're here and we make energy. We think that we create energy. You just think about it in every way. It's exactly backwards. Energy becomes everything material. Some years ago, they started doing something called Curlian photography, where they can photograph energy. Again, you could look at it out here. And what they find is that the energy comes first. Then the material object forms. So they have pictures, many pictures. You can take a picture of a leaf with this Curlian photography, and you see the leaf, but you see these little, like, almost like light bits of energy. You take the leaf, you cut it in half, you take another picture, what do you see? You don't see the leaf, but you see the whole leaf energetically. You've cut the leaf, a body dies, nothing happens to the energy. The energy continues. It's energy first, causal, astral, material. So this spark of energy defines who we are. It tells us, it is a roadmap. It's instructions for us. It says, here's what your body's going to look like. Here's what your experiences are like. You're actually going to really love chocolate and hate vanilla. When you meet this person down the road, you're going to not like them and you won't know why. You're going to meet this person, you're going to feel like, I've known them all my life. How could that be? I just met them. You're going to be quiet and shy. Or you're going to be really extroverted and outgoing. You're going to be somebody with a huge amount of energy. What is all of that? All of that is lifetime after lifetime after lifetime of this soul's journey on its way back to the divine. Having been, for whatever reason, remember I told you, Buddha said, when people kept asking him, but why? Buddha's answer was, the mind that asked that question could never understand the answer. And here's what I want to say to you. So these chakras, that first the energy comes in through the medulla, and it basically descends. And it descends. We're going to talk about them from the bottom up so that you can see on this path back to the divine. Then I'm going to come back to everything I just said to you to make it make sense. This is the first, what we call the first chakra. It's the root chakra. If we thought about it anatomically, we would say it's located somewhere around the anus, but it's not, because it's actually an energy at a core. And this is not, they're not disconnected. They're not discrete. What happens is this. We can think of it as a, I'm going to finish every thought I just started. I promise you I'll bring it all back together. I have just realized I have to fill in some blanks for you so it makes sense. If you think of it as a stream, as a thing, as a whole tube of water that came in, very easy to imagine it flowing. When you see a stream, you see a little bit of water gets stuck over here and twigs in the rocks, and there's something over here, maybe a beaver built a dam. There can be anything down there. And you get these little whirlpools of energy. They're outside of the main flow. There's a number of ways that you could get that water to flow again. If you open a dam and you bring a lot of water in, you could actually get the, probably it could pull some of those, push the debris away and pull the water back in. We've all seen that. That's what happens. So you can make the water run faster. You can actually go in and try and remove the debris. But if it's a long river, you're going to be working on it for a long time, right? So there's a number of ways that you can get things flowing. Our job is to keep energy flowing through these chakras. And people always talk about opening chakras or neutralizing the energy. They're all sort of misnomers. But what we want to do is we want to get energy. There's no such thing as a good chakra, a bad chakra. Many people have heard our lower chakras aren't good. We don't want to be in them. They have to do with money and sex and power, and they're bad. No such thing. No chakra is good or bad. The only question we have to ask ourselves is, which way is the energy flowing? What are we doing with it? I'm going to give you a couple of examples here. So our whole goal, what a human life is about, literally, the purpose of the human life is to get energy to flow smoothly, without interruption, up through each of these chakras, because each of these chakras, and remember, it's completely unique to us. There's no accident. If we deserted a husband or a wife in the last life because we decided to have an affair, we fell in love with somebody else, we left three children, we didn't really care about them, it happens all the time, and then we die. Later we die. That gets imprinted on our chakras. You know, you behaved very selfishly, you behaved very self-centeredly, you hurt people, you know, you were not generous of spirit or maybe even of your money or anything. All of that gets registered, just like it gets registered energetically if you do wonderful things for people, if your heart is open, if you, you know, you take care of people who are homeless. I mean, you can think of whatever it is. If you're really industrious and you work hard and you've been successful, so it doesn't even have to be spiritual accomplishments. Every single thing that happens to us, because remember I said to you, everything's energy. Every thought is energy. Every act that we do is energy. We think of these things as separate. It's all energy. It's all making an imprint on this astral spine. The only thing that continues when this body itself dies is that astral spine. Nothing happens to it. In Sanskrit, it's called a jiva. It means an individualized soul. It doesn't change. Ramakrishna was one time talking with some of his disciples who were asking questions, and I think it was Ramakrishna. He said, I see what the problem is here. You actually think of each life as being separate. He said, I see it as one flow of the soul. That's hard for our minds to get. But once we begin to know that, we understand. Oh, look at this. I'm working out some issues about loyalty, security, being grounded in this life. Those are first chakra issues. So it's not, is it a bad chakra? We all need to feel grounded. We need to put down roots. It's called the root chakra. Nothing wrong with that. We all need to develop loyalty. The question is, do we consciously decide what are we going to be loyal to? What are we going to live our life in terms of? Where do we want our loyalty to go? Are we loyal to our business and making money and becoming richer? Is that where we think we get our security? By having more money, by controlling more people? Then we have all of that energy from the chakra out there in one of the whirlpools. It's taking us out into the world and it's keeping us down. From a spiritual perspective, down and out are the wrong directions. You know, all my life I always told people, even from the time I was little, I used to say to my mother, I like the directions of north and west. She used to say to me, what do you mean? I said, I was born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, by the way. I was 4 years old. I used to tell her, I like north and west. Of course, I was right. I wanted to come to the Northwest. I mean, it is really one of the spiritual centers of our country. You know, it's direction. Everything about these chakras, about how we live our life, is about our intentions, keeping our thoughts in a good direction, heading in the right direction, having good intentions, even if we can't accomplish everything that we want to accomplish. So where are we putting our loyalty? Where do we think our security comes from? What are we grounding ourselves in? The qualities of the chakra aren't bad. What we do with them, and it's not good or bad. It can just cost us a few thousand lives if we head in the wrong direction. You know, there's no rush here. The soul's going to make it back to where it's going. The question is, what are we doing in this life? What opportunities are we being given to change the direction, to change the flow? How can we look at life experiences and say, why is this happening in my life? What can I get from it? How can I use this we don't walk around saying, how can I use this to change the direction or energy of flow of energy in my chakras? We don't think like that. But we might say, what is the impossibility? Imagine if you tried to change every bad habit that you have, every bad thought, try and go back, and we can't even remember what happened to us last night, many of us, never mind a lifetime ago. It's impossible. My teacher, Yogananda, he left his body in 1952, but he said it's a blessing that we don't remember past lives, because we've all done anything we've ever seen, he says, anybody do anything, we've all done it. We've all been there. The fact that we're here being interested in this means that we are highly evolved souls already. We are well on our way on this journey that this soul is taking. The second chakra has to do with, you know, so you can see the first chakra, the element. Oh, it's not on it here. The first chakra, It's called the root chakra. It's the element that it's related to is earth. You know, there are many, many books out there that will help you get whatever information that you want, because every chakra has a crystal, a color, a sound, a note, a flower essence, energetically that will affect it. So I've had clients. Now, you know, I mean, I've had clients where I'm writing prescriptions for every drug in the world, but there are times when people come to me and say to me, I just feel like my heart is closed. And we talk about it, and we do a lot about it. But sometimes I'll say to them, why don't you start wearing a little more green? Just wear the color green. Sometimes when men come, this is just a small part of it. I don't want you to think, you know, a month could go by, I don't mention a chakra to anybody, or 2 months, or whatever. But men come to me, particularly men in my church, and they'll say, I just can't open my heart. I can't, and it is particularly more difficult for men. I tell them, come up to East West. You see this beautiful chakra? Isn't that gorgeous? They brought it in here for me tonight. I love that. I say, just sit in front of it. Breathe from your heart to it. Because you can't be logical about these things. You can't say, now I'm going to go after this problem. Now I'm going to go after that. It's like that game Jack in the Box. Literally, you'll spend so many lifetimes. We are just such a mass, as I said, of self-definitions, of inclinations, of judgments. So what do? We do everything that we can do to draw our energy up to the higher chakras, to get the energy flowing in that direction. So this may or may not make sense to many of you, but again, remember, part of my life, I'm a minister, and I'm speaking to people about these things. I'm teaching meditation, because that's why they're coming to me in that circumstance. And I say to people, the most important thing I could say to you, now I'm saying it to all of you, even though I'm not in my robes here, but I'm still saying it to you. If you did nothing, but as many times of the day as you could think about it, focus your energy, your concentration, your awareness at what we call the point between the eyebrows. It's called the Christ Center. It's called the third eye. You know, it's not a mistake that Indians wear kumkum there, that Catholics put ashes there on Ash Wednesday, the many places where you go for a blessing or have some holy water put, they sprinkle it here. Why? Because it's a spiritual center of our being, not of this body, so to speak, because it's the sixth chakra. It's called the spiritual eye. And if what we do is if we, just like opening a dam and making the water flow, if we can focus as much as we can focus here, if it doesn't even have to make sense to you, if you do it, oh, I remember what Shanti says. Let me find this. And it's not exactly the point between your eyebrow. It's a little higher than that. I often tell people, hold your thumb out at the level of your forehead and just look there. You don't look up and make yourself cross-eyed. But you look like that. That's where it is. And you find that point and trace it back to your forehead. But it's about here. And you just, sometimes even during the day, or if I'm trying to think or I'm at work, you know, I work a day of a really very, very busy urgent care clinic. It's much more like an emergency room every week. I still do that. And it's stressful. It can be very stressful. And I just, you know, I just find myself sitting like this. Like, just remember, Shanti, breathe. Draw your energy up here. It's part of why breathing can be so calming. It really has a lot to do with these chakras. Because we use our breath, although we don't know it, to control our energy. If you have somebody who's having a panic attack or they're hysterical, what's the first thing you tell them? I mean, you don't need to be a doctor to know. You say, take some deep breaths. You tell people to breathe because breath can control some of the energy, redirect it. Energy is called prana. We use breath to control prana. That's why those exercises are called pranayama. Maybe you've all heard of it. It's all connected in the same systems. So, I mean, we can keep going up the chakras, and I want to just to answer, to get to some answer for your question, just a little bit. So the second chakra, it's about flexibility, these qualities, fluidity, sexuality, creativity. Nothing about that is bad. But when we say, what does it mean that somebody can go with the flow? Really, that they have that in them. That feels like a good quality. That means whatever life throws at them, they're able to adapt and go with it, and maybe make the best out of it. They thought they were heading one direction. Whoop, guess what? The world just threw you a surprise. Now you're over here. What do? Do you get hysterical, which most people do? Do you lose control of things for a while, which most people do? Whatever it looks like, that's what happens. Or do you have it within you? Have you practiced enough? Because it's all a practice. Honestly, it all goes back to meditation. It's really the truth. But it's a practice of learning techniques that help you draw this energy. And it really is. It's like a spiral staircase in there. That's how it works. I don't know this for myself, but I know this is what all the masters say and people that I believe, people who I've seen be able to transcend all of this in many, many ways. So I believe them. I can't really say I've sat in my spine and experienced that spiral staircase, but we're going to take their word for it. And if we're not doing that in our second chakra, if we're out of control there, you know, you get very wishy-washy, you find your energy going all over the place, you get much more rigid, you don't like surprises or sudden changes, you get fixed in the way you think things are supposed to go, but all of the chakras are working together. Could you possibly have a second chakra that was wide open with beautiful energy flowing if you didn't have your first chakra in order? If you didn't know where you were rooted, where your security lied, what direction you were heading? Of course not. If it's like water, it would just be all over the place. Or if it's about sex, you're just out there, you're having indiscriminate sex, you're behaving in ways you don't feel good about, you wonder why you keep doing it. All of that's really what's about. Not, again, are these things good or bad? Sex is not good or bad, but sometimes what we do with it leaves us feeling not good about ourselves, contracted, ashamed. That's what we mean by bad. We mean taking us down and out. We mean taking us in a direction where we feel smaller and smaller and smaller, as opposed to having an experience where we have a beautiful lovemaking experience, or when we begin to use even our sexuality to truly create love in the world or with a partner, rather than all of the ways we can behave that don't feel good, that are just lustful and indiscreet. Again, it's not about a judgment, because you can always go inside and say to yourself, how did that make me feel? How did that leave me feeling? You don't have to be so centered in your heart chakra that you're totally an intuitive person. You could ask yourself the truth. I just behaved in this way or that, or I just had this experience, or I just reacted to my partner or to a friend, or I just overreacted. How does that leave me feeling? If it doesn't leave you feeling standing up straight, chest out, feeling good, lighthearted, ask yourself, what am I going to do about that? Because really, you can trace it all back to this. You know, I just gave a 3-hour class on Patanjali's Yoga Sutras on Saturday, which was a bit of a trick trying to cover that in 3 hours, but nonetheless, I did it. And I just realized all of these great teachings, all of these eternal truths, you can look at them and you could say you can live your whole life in terms of them. You could find the yamas and niyamas, for any of you who know what they are. You could just design your whole life in terms of them. You could learn about the chakras. It's the same thing, because they're all, of course, related. I mean, each of the yamas and niyamas relates to one of our chakras, too. All of these eternal spiritual truths. The third chakra is the element that's related to it is fire. It's about power. It's about fiery self-determination, being strong, owning our power. And it's about that element of fire that burns things and transforms them. So we're going from this very gross physical manifestation to water, which is much more fluid, to fire, which literally takes the form away from things. Whatever you put into a fire, excuse me, it doesn't come out looking like that in the end. It's a transforming experience that we're having in the third chakra. The fourth chakra, represented by the heart or near the heart, sits behind the heart, and the element is air, which is actually formless. You can compress it, you can contain it, but left on its own, it really doesn't have a form. And so we're moving, you can see, back from this material, back into the astral form of things. Our soul's heading in the right direction to find its true nature. Again, not this that we think we are, but who we truly are. Now, what happens in the heart? And this is the answer to the question of how do we know? The heart, when the energy's flowing upward towards the next chakra, towards the third eye, we feel love, but we feel it in a devotional way. It's a calm love. It's a peaceful feeling. It's a love that, you know, when I say to my husband, so you know, I'm a minister, it's my life. And I'm also a physician. There are many, many ways I have of being in the world that I'm just out in the world serving. It's just what this life was about for me. And I'll say to my husband, but honey, you know how much I love you. And he'll say to me, I know, sweetie, but you love everybody that much. And, you know, poor guy. I mean, in a way, I should say poor guy. He doesn't feel like a poor guy. But, you know, he's right. Because he's right. I just look at people. I try and feel their soul, connect with the heart. And I'm looking at everybody, and I see Divine Mother looking back at me. It's hard to make one manifestation of the divine better than the next. It becomes a very impersonal feeling. When it's not that, when it's about our likes and dislikes and our attachments it becomes very emotional and it's very irrational. And once we have all of our likes and dislikes there, we cannot discern if it's the truth. We can't. So we have to get ourselves into this calm place where the little self, the Shanti, the person who likes this thing in people, doesn't like that thing in people, likes this food and not that food, likes this kind of whatever, lighting or place or way to travel and doesn't like that. We have to sort of get outside of that person and come into the divine self, to put down our likes and dislikes, a lot of our inclinations and disinclinations, our prejudices, and really begin to notice, just like air, that we are a part of all that is. And really, we begin to hear the truth. We can plug into our heart and say, this feels right. I believe this. And maybe we don't dive all the way in. Maybe when we're not sure, we say, I'm going to take a step forward. Like when I came upon this path of Ananda and self-realization. You know, you start going to Sunday services, then you take a class, then you do this. Now, I've been here since 1979, so it's not, but I didn't just move into the community. I waited and tested it out until I kept saying, yes, this feels good. Yes, this feels right. Yes, you know, with that person saying, not only does it feel right to me, but it makes me feel good. Because if somebody's trying to tell you something and it makes you feel horrible about yourself or bad or wrong or less than, it's not the truth. It is not the truth. Not that there aren't things that are hard. You know, this week twice I'm just going to say this one thing, then I'm going to stop for questions. Wherever we are, because, you know, I usually teach the chakras in 8 weeks, and there you have it. Here we are with an hour and a half, and I want time for questions. But, you know, twice this week I met new patients in my practice. I actually don't take a lot of new patients, but for various reasons, I felt called to see these people. In one instance, it was a physician who came to me, a lovely woman, who told me that she has everything in the world that she's supposed to have, but her life is falling apart. She told me this on the phone. So I'm thinking to myself, well, that can't all be true. Everything's perfect, but my life is falling apart. No, I don't think so, I said to myself. Anyway, she comes in, and I spend an hour and 15 minutes listening to her. And she tells me a lot of stories about herself, the abusive childhood she had, the way she's turned into this extraordinarily high achiever who has achieved everything. You know, wanted to tell me that her marriage was perfect, but then sort of let slip many ways that it was actually quintessentially not perfect. And I sat there and I thought to myself, what am I going to do? Because if I just say to her, this, this, and this, and this, and this are off, she's not ready to hear all that. She has everything so compartmentalized that she wants to believe her life is perfect as it is, but she's killing herself in many ways. She can't sleep. She's a nervous wreck. It's not too long before those things become cancers and heart attacks and high blood pressure and, you know, you're losing your hair and, I mean, a million other things. So I said to her at some point, you know, this is going to be very hard for you, what I'm about to say, and I'm saying it to you just so that you know that I know, understanding that you might never come back to see me again. And I want you to come back because I actually feel we can work together. But somehow I feel the only way through this right now, the only way for me to genuinely care about you is to be honest enough that you see that you in the way you would say it, you should come back. So I need to tell you, I am very concerned about you, very. And I want to tell you truthfully, I think, and I told her a few things, but in this tone of voice, and I said to her, you know, you are so, I see your essence, it's so lovely. I find myself caring deeply about you. I'm sitting in front of a beautiful woman who's so bright and who can do anything, but is just so off of her path that you will die if you continue doing this. So I want to say to you, not imminently, not tonight, not, but your life is on the line here. You must hear that there are things you don't know, things I cannot say to you today. It would be like speaking Greek to you. But you have to decide to open to things that will be so new to you. You who have been to every major university in the world, who has all these advanced degrees, who thinks you know everything. You don't know anything about what I want to tell you. You just have to decide, does it feel right and can you trust me? You know, I had to appeal to her heart, to some place where she could feel the truth and not try and know it. Because she has too many stories she's been telling herself all her life. We're all like that. We are all like that. I'll tell you, it's just so clear to me that Bernie Siegel, who was a surgeon at Yale years ago, decades ago, in the 60s, known as one of the best surgeons in the country, somebody came to him once. This guy had metastatic cancer. And nobody felt like they had anything to offer him. And they said, we can't operate. He didn't want to believe it. I met this man many times. This isn't a story. I mean, Bernie Siegel was real, and he's written books about it and everything. Not about this man, but this man and many others. And this man came to Bernie, and Bernie looked, and he said, no, I can't. I can't. There's no way to operate on your tumor. He said, but tell me a little bit about yourself. He said, this man's got cancer that's everywhere. And the man tells him he was he was born Jewish in an Eastern European country, and they emigrated here and landed at Ellis Island the way a lot of those Jews did. And Bernie said, well, what was your life like there? He said, well, I was a violinist. He said, I picked up a violin when I was 2, and I was a child protege. This man had a Stradivarius violin that probably, he said it was worth $100,000 then. Millions of dollars. It had belonged to some great musician, I don't remember. I say Stravinsky, but I'm not sure. It doesn't matter. And no, I'm confusing it because it was a Stradivarius. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And Bernie said, well, what happened to your violin? He said, when we landed on Ellis Island, my father took that violin, and he said, you don't need this thing anymore. We're in America now. We're going to open a business. We're going to make money. And he put the violin in the attic. Bernie says, you've never played since? He said, no. And Bernie said, do you miss it? The guy said, I haven't even thought about it in all these years. This guy's sitting there with metastatic cancer. Bernie said, I want you to start playing the violin. The guy said, I haven't touched that violin in, like, by now it's 50 years. Bernie said, it doesn't matter. 15 minutes a day. In fact, I want you to see me twice a week. Bring the violin with you. The man started playing his violin. And you know what happened? Seriously, his cancer disappeared. Now, what are these? I said to you an hour ago, I could tell you, I've often said, I'm just going to come here some night and tell stories. Because, you know, as a physician and somebody who everybody comes to you and wants to tell, as a minister, all this, you hear these stories. And I've had these experiences, many of them. But I'm no different than any of you. There's nothing about me that's different. It's just, I've paid attention. And for whatever reason, I've been given these stories till one day you say to yourself, like the man winking at me in ICU and Bernie's patient being healed, what is really going on here? We are not what we think we are. We are this. We have energy. We are energy. We need to begin to know that and find out, how do we begin to take control of that? How do we make conscious choices about that? It doesn't all need to make sense. We're probably all going to have some more lifetimes. Maybe some of you will make it to samadhi this time, to your crown chakra. I'm not so sure I think it's that I'm going to make it there. But, you know, that's not even the point. Every bit of progress that we make this life, every bit of progress, it gets registered. It comes in as the blueprint next time. No energy towards soul progress can ever be wasted, ever. It doesn't matter what happens in this life. This life, we don't know this, but the masters say it's like taking off your clothes at night. Nothing happens to your body. You get up the next day, you put on clean clothes. That's all. Nothing changes. Same thing with our soul. We're born into one body, the body dies, nothing happens. Have you ever been around a dead body? Doesn't feel at all like that person anymore. Not at all. Because what is that person is this. That's what goes on in the soul and comes in next time. And you meet somebody and you think, God, I feel like I've known this person all my life. Well, they were probably your best friend or your sister or your brother or your mother or who knows. Really. And I've met people where I just know without a doubt. I have a grandniece right now. From the minute I met her when she was 2 weeks old, we knew each other. She looked at me, 2 weeks old. And when she's four now. When I visit her all the time, she wraps herself around my legs, screams and yells. She loves her mother. They're great. They're doing great. I need to be with Shanti, she says, from the time she's two. I have to drag her with my foot. Her mother said to her, too, do you want to go and live with Shanti? Yes, I have to live with Shanti. She doesn't live with me. We've known each other. I don't know what happened in the last life. Who knows? Maybe we were beloveds. Something. This is real. This isn't just hocus pocus. And as soon as we, and I'm just going to say to you, there's no way there but meditation. No way. You have to meditate. Then you get inside of your spine, and you have to take meditation classes, and I mean it, wherever you do it. I'm not selling anything here. I'm really trying to say this is the only way to peace, to happiness, to contentment, which is so essential, to true joy, not just moments of happiness when we're not suffering. Okay, they get very mad at me because they want us out of here at 9 o'clock. So we have 6 minutes. Questions, comments? Did I confuse you or answer anything? Probably didn't. Anyway, you've been here. You stay. This was wonderful. This, too, is registering in your chakras, so I'm glad you're here. Yes?
So if you are having difficulties physically, which obviously a lot of disease is emotionally based or whatever.
Energetically based.
Yeah. Is there a way to look up what is related to your discomfort?
Yes, absolutely.
Try to work on that internally?
Yeah, there is. And I'm going to say this. Whether, you see, not everybody loses their cancer like Bernie Siegel's patient did, because it's not all of our karma. Sometimes it's our karma to live, to learn how to be with at peace with the disease. So when people call me and say, can you help me? Before they even tell me what's wrong, I say, of course I can help you. Of course I can. I can help everybody. I mean, I know that. Because I'm not saying I'm going to cure you of your disease. I'm saying I'm going to help you learn how to cope. So there's a woman whose name is Savitri. I don't know if the book's here. She wrote one of the best, it's called A Handbook to the Chakras or something like that. That book is filled with everything about every chakra. I mean, chants that you can do, colors, the crystal, foods, things like that, and how it's related to what diseases.
Yeah.
Now, it's not a simple formula like that, but it's a very good, I mean, none of this, you know, it's not like when I prescribe steroids for people because, you know, the medicines I can prescribe can really hurt us. This is never going to hurt us. Yeah. Not if our intention's right. So it's a really, really good place to start.
What was the name?
You know, I think it's called The Handbook to the Chakras. I wish I had a way of being in touch with you. I usually start a piece of paper and collect anybody's email who wants to be on a little mailing list I do that just says when I'm giving other classes or talks. And does anybody have a blank piece of paper? If you want to start it around, and if you want to know, you can write on there like Savitri's handbook, and I can send you. Yeah, I don't want this. If you want to put, please make your email, your name and your email legible. And you can tell me if you want to be on a mailing list or if you only want to know about Savitri's book. And I'll tell you about it. Yes?
I have a question. I'm not exactly clear on it, but tonight you mentioned about the egg and sperm joining and the chakras being formed. What else can you say about that? About, is it two chakras coming together and forming one in us, or what is
No, not two chakras. We all have seven chakras.
Yeah, but I mean the two entities.
No.
Energy.
So the you know, here's what I've been told.
Yeah.
By Yogananda, who was an avatar. I'm just telling you what I'm told.
Right.
God himself knows. I don't know about this. But what Yogananda says happens is that when the instant the sperm and the ovum unite, that a flash of light goes into the astral world. And there are souls that are drawn to that light. And the, whatever soul makes it, gets to reincarnate in that body, becomes that embryo.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anybody else have any questions or comments? Yes.
You were mentioning earlier regarding the chakras and in karma, the relationship between them. And I was just wondering if basically, like, some of the vectors and our direction that our lives take are guided by, like, say, an effect on, say, our endocrine system, which is kind of related to the chakras, and how our spirit or our soul can basically kind of nudge our actions in a particular way.
Well, you know,
so that we can meet or whatever others, what joins us to the greater.
Yeah. Well, I think really the question that you're asking, I mean, and I mean, this is really the whole subject of it. What we call karma is really all of the imprints, energetic imprints on these chakras.
Right.
And they come out and they guide us. We don't think about them, we don't hear them, but they are guiding our whole life. Now, fortunately, we have free will. Part of our free will is that we can decide which direction we want our energy to go, which is what I was saying. But that is the most that we can do. It's guiding everything about your life. Somebody asked Swami Kriyananda once, you mean everything is on this show? Like everything, like what tie I put on in the morning? He said, absolutely. I mean, these are people who know they're having more direct experiences of this than I am. So it's affecting, it is everything, endocrinologically and everything. Who you meet, when you meet them, what you do in that relationship. Everything in your life is coming from here. Now, you don't have to be a victim to it, but yes, it's directing us. And then we can say, no, I'm going to take control of this. I'm going to whatever. And as I said, honestly, the bottom line is, I'm going to learn how to meditate. I'm going to learn how to use breath and other things and control all of this. So, did that answer your question?
Sure.
It's a complicated question. You're asking the question of the whole.
That's all right.
Yeah. Okay. One, the last question, and then I have to.
I have one comment and then two questions. The one comment is actually lately they've been letting people go till 9:15 because they're, I don't know,
okay.
Some people. But, you know, in case someone walks in, I'll be happy to just walk out and stop my mouth. So it's two questions in one. You don't have to answer because I don't really know. But and it's like male between female. I know overall it's not supposed to matter. And maybe your comments about it. And then also,
what, like, you're asking me, why do we come in a male or a female?
No, I'm just,
or the difference?
Is it okay to say there's a difference? Because, I mean, I just read today there's a study that just came out with that a woman, when they're on their period, actually are more spatially cognizant and able to give better directions than when they're not on their period. And then the first 2 weeks when they're training physically, they're actually doing a little bit better than the last 2 months of their menstrual cycle because of hormones and things like that. So a lot of spiritual people say not to distinguish between men and women. But yet we live in a human world because we're spiritual in human bodies. And, you know, I don't see how you can just throw it out the window.
That's, I think, here's the truth. We're talking about where are we on a continuum that Yogananda says takes millions of lives. It's hard. It's impossible to think about. But this soul's journey is over time. Ultimately, when we've reached this state of samadhi, and actually, quite frankly, there's a state before it called dhyana. We don't think of ourselves as male or female. We've transcended all of that. That's a spiritual growth issue. Where we are, I would say it's more meaningful for us to realize that we came in as a man or a woman for particular reasons. I mean, karmically, this has been dictated. I'm answering my last question. Okay. They want people roaming. I don't blame them. I do, too. You know, I love East West. We want you to be inspired now and go out there and shop around the store. And I want to give you all the time you need to do that. But so it's a little bit of a complicated question you're asking, because
how do we live in this world?
No, we have to live in this world in terms of who.
Some of the teachers say just ignore it all.
No, I don't agree with that. Let me just say that.
Yeah, asking you're a woman.
Yeah, you're asking me because I'm a woman. I think that what matters is, here's the most important thing on the spiritual path. I think the most important thing on the spiritual path is self-honesty. We cannot take our next step, until we know where we are, who we are, what we can do. This is what's very painful for me when people come to me and they tell me they're diagnosed with cancer and they say, I don't want any Western medical treatment, I'm going to cure myself. Now, I can tell you, I'm 69 years old, I've been at this a long time. The number of people who I personally, other than that patient that I was just telling you about, the Bernie Siegel guy, seen cure themselves from a cancer, which even means they come in definitively diagnosed with cancer and ultimately don't have it, one. Remember I told you at the beginning I had the third largest medical practice in the entire United States for many, many years. I have seen a lot of people. Not that it's not possible. Yogananda could have cured himself of anything. The question is, are we at a place in our spiritual development where we have the ability to focus and concentrate our energy like that? Most of us do not. So we have to be honest about where we are and what we can accomplish. Right now, we have to say, I'm a woman. That matters. There's a lot of things that I cannot do in this world that men can do. Many. Physically, physiologically, emotionally. I mean, I'm very female. It's just simply the truth. So it's not that I want to be stuck with that definition of myself. I know my soul's not female, but I came into a female body. Okay. All right, guys, we're going to have to end, but thank you all very much. Thank you.